They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Sue Bartholomew. Joining me on the Commons today, we have Karen Halfer. Karen is amazing. She started off as a therapist, family, and marriage counselor. And she's gone on to write two books, and she's really concerned about legal abuse and has a lot to say about that, and I think her books are about it. And she's also now getting into ADA advocacy, something we all really need to know a little bit more about. So, Karen, I am delighted and thrilled to have you with us today.
It's so good to be back with you, Sue.
And you're coming to us all the way from across the other side of the country, so it's great to have you, and your voice sounds great. So tell us a little bit. You've got two books out, and you're now working on ADA advocacy, which I think is something we really need to learn a lot more about. So tell me about your books first.
Well, we revised and updated the very first book that defined legal abuse syndrome. And that now is in ebook. It describes legal abuses, what happens to people when they're caught up in a court system or a situation where the law is being used against them. And it gives 8 steps for helping at those times, because all of my work is solution oriented. If I can't find a solution, it's frustrating to write about it. I can define the problem really well. Now what do we do about it? So that's what we're doing. So that is the newest book, and it's out on ebook only though. And then the other two are the original Legal Abuse Syndrome and Overcoming the Devastation, actually. And then the last one, which also serves as the manual for our classes, is Unlocking Justice.
So is this a prevalent problem throughout the country? I mean, do people get abused in the legal system?
It is more prevalent than it was when I first identified it in 95 and wrote about it then. It is more so now than ever. It's become a bully system, and a system where if I can take your stuff, I'm just going to do it. And it's not what they call actionable. I can do it in such a way, and this is where the homeowners associations come in. I can take your stuff in such a way that there's nothing you can really do about it. If you try, it's going to be such an uphill, expensive battle, it's not worth it. So just let me have your house. Let me have your property. Let me have whatever I'm looking for. So you have teams, actually, of bullies out there that will do this kind of thing. And then we have those who fight it. We have lawyers and those who try to help people. But what we find, 1 out of 4 people have a disability. Now, that means you're not going to see all those disabilities. Some people have depression, anxiety. They have multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's. They'll have diabetes. They have a variety of cardiac conditions. They'll have emotional conditions. And sometimes just stress, just the PTSD that is epidemic in our country from the way we treat one another and these kinds of power differentials where I've got the power, so I'm going to do what I want to do. I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you want or what your rights are. I'm going to do it because I can. And this has become a prevalent attitude. So this causes stress. We don't realize all the time we're behaving this way, we're undermining the health of our nation. But we wind up with stress conditions, PTSD, acute stress disorder, a variety of anxiety disorders. And it's one of those things that, what are we going to do?
What's the medical community doing about it? Anything?
Worrying. And they're stressed, too, because they are being squeezed financially. And they're having the same power differential issues where corporations are coming in and taking over private practices. And so we had one cardiologist not long ago who killed himself because the corporation wouldn't let him have his client's files. They simply took over everything in his office, took control of his patients, and tried to tell him what he was going to do. Our doctors are working longer hours for less than ever, and they get less support. So it's the medical community is worried and suffering, and they don't know what to do about it. So we train doctors, too, as to what you can do so when that patient comes back again and again, you tell them what to do, you try and help them out, pretty soon they're back and they're symptomatic. Well, it's because this kind of thing recycles. If you're in court, your stress and your situation recycles. So the doctors end up with compassion fatigue. They end up worn out from it. I don't know what to tell you, except you're going to have to quit this litigation. You're going to have to quit this fight. You're going to have to move out of your home because the stress is going to kill you. So what we do is tell the doctor, no, no, no. They don't have to. Doctor, here's what you can do. And I have asked the last group of doctors I was training in Las Vegas for Humana. And I said, does anybody doubt that PTSD is being caused? And it's an epidemic in our nation. And it's being caused by our behavior within our own culture. I said, if you doubt that, let's put it on the table and talk about it now. And not one person disagreed with that.
So basically we're doing it. Is it because we don't understand what we're doing or because we've just gone right off the deep end? I mean, I look around me and I just scratch my head. And I think, how can you behave that way? How can you do that? How can you say that? How can you be so abusive?
A few people who are bullies, who are psychopaths, have gotten control. And then they tend to go for more power. So they will own the corporation that employs the people that work for them, who have a conscience, who don't like what's going on, who know it's wrong to be doing what they're doing, but they have no control. They're given the three-ring binder, put in a cubicle, and told, deny them their medication. And they have to listen to the person suffer. And I've done training in these organizations. These people are miserable. They're stressed. So, yes, this is something we're doing to ourselves, but the key that we've found is helping each other. Well, sometimes one person helps another person, and that makes all the difference. That person has to be trained. That person has to know what they're doing. They can mean well and make you feel better, but to solve your problem, they have to be able to step up in the face of what's going wrong and use what power we have and use the laws that we have. And one very powerful law we have is a disability law.
Karen, I want to jump in here. One of the things I tell people about HOAs is there's more of us, the homeowners, the simple homeowners, than there is of them, which is the industry and the bullies and the board members. Not all board members are bad, but you have enough that give the entire system a really bad name. And it stinks. I mean, let's be very, very clear and honest about it. It really smells. There's more of us. Why is it that we, the majority, don't push back and take over? Why can't we decide to stop these people? Is it fear that's holding us back? Do they use fear to keep us in place? What's the magic bullet there?
Well, one, we don't know what to do. Two, trying to organize people is a nightmare.
Tell me about it.
If you've ever tried to organize people, it's just very hard.
Yeah.
They all have different opinions. The other is, we want peace. The regular run of people, 80%, 80, 85%, we want peace. We want to go home in our neighborhood and enjoy it. We don't want a war, so we don't want to engage in anything that could end up in a war where we're going to be losing our peace and our opportunity for some peace
and
be stressed out. And sometimes our health can't take it.
What I'm told often is, all I want is to be left alone.
Yes.
And that's another way of saying I want peace.
Yeah. Leave me alone. Let me live my life. I'm not bothering you. Well, 10 to 15% of the people don't want peace. They want power. And those people are the ones that are stirring it up. They're taking advantage of those of us that want peace. And we don't know what to do until in court it had gotten so bad that people were just being bullied out of the courtroom. They were just being losing by attrition. They couldn't take it anymore until we got the Americans with Disabilities Act advocates trained, certified in those courtrooms with those people, saying absolutely not. They have to have accommodations. They have to be any alteration that is reasonable has to be made for a person with a disability. I don't care if it's a visible disability or not.
I want you to emphatically let people know that they are not. You don't have to tell them what your disability is. You don't have to have a doctor's letter explaining your disability. Karen, Would you address that, please?
You never have to defend your disability. By law, by disability law, you are entitled to your privacy. The only time you have to show it at all is in order to get your accommodation. You have to go make the arrangements, and sometimes you have to show what you have. And we vet our clients because they're going to be accused. And we know that when they go in that courtroom, and I spoke in Greece a couple of years ago to an international audience, and this is just not an American problem. This is an international problem. And I said, I never again want to hear a judge say or anyone say to another person, you don't look disabled to me. Well, what are your credentials?
Yeah.
You show me your credentials, then we'll talk about my disability.
Yeah, I asked them if they're practicing medicine without a license.
And they are.
They are. Absolutely they are.
And if you practice law without a license the same way,
the lawyers will be all over you, won't they?
That's right.
They'll be all over you. But that's true. I mean, I hear from people, and more people than I can help. There's nothing, you know, there's very, very little I can do except listen to them and offer them some words and some advice. And I always say, you do not have to tell anybody what your disability is. They are not entitled to get your medical records. I mean, they get that in the association. They'll be spreading it like wildfire.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, did you see that Jane has got so-and-so, and did you know that Joe has got so-and-so, and he hides it well, or, you know, watch him, he's going to be all over the place, and I always thought he was drunk, but he's got some disease, you know, or maybe he's covering up. It's the type of sheer nastiness.
Yes.
It's just sheer nastiness.
But it's nastiness with a purpose. They want something. The last homeowners association meeting I was attending, there was a person that was being very nasty and was going around and finding all of, and you have one of these in every association, finding all of the violations.
Yeah.
They turned in 66 violations of all of the homeowners and then wanted to fire the board because they were doing nothing about it. I said, what does he want? I said, what isn't clear to us is what his motive is. There's a reason he's doing this. Well, he wanted something in his property that was against the rules, and he figured he would get that, and he sued. And he wound up getting $70,000 and raising the insurance rates for everybody in the association.
Yeah.
So they do damage. What is their motive? What are they looking for? And then they have to be confronted on that. But I wrote the rules that have to be followed for the people in the association, the human beings, the ADA rules, separate from fair housing, because you'll get lumped under fair housing. But separate from that, when one human being attacks another, then that person has some rights.
So many of these issues in associations, people not following the quote-unquote rules, are felonious because the association does not have the right to adopt those rules. They don't know what they're doing. I mean, we've created such a mess, Karen. It's a huge mess. And even some of the attorneys don't know what's going on.
even the attorneys whose job is in the association law, I mean, they think just because it's in one association, then every association has the right to do that. You can't do that. You just can't do that. What I want to do is dissolve all associations.
Well, they're not working.
They're not. They're not. They're absolutely not. And you probably won't be able to actually dissolve the corporation. But, and I talk about this often, there's one couple here in Virginia who bankrupted the association. The association went after them. They ended up in court. The homeowners won. In Virginia, you're entitled to the person who wins is maybe entitled to fees and costs. And they were the prevailing party, so they won. The association sued them again. The homeowners won. They collected all their fees and costs, and they did this a number of times. And the association always was suing them because they did not want to lose. And every time they lost, to the point where they didn't have any money. They just totally bankrupted the association. So the homeowners got together, and what they did, they looked at dismantling the association. That was too hard. What they did, Karen, was brilliant. They amended the governing documents, and they stripped the association of all its powers. The only power they were allowed to have was to collect enough money to maintain a one-acre grassy area and to pay for the insurance on that area. That was pretty much it.
That's brilliant, and that should be published.
I talk about it just about every show I'm on. I talk about it because I think it's such a brilliant way of handling it.
Yes.
But when this, and the thing is, they turned that from a war zone into a real community. When it snows over here, they get together and they clear out the snow. They hire a plow, and one of them will go around the neighborhood with a hat, and they all contribute something towards the plow. They have Christmas parties. They have, you know, they do all kinds of things together, and they're a real neighborhood. They really are a community, unlike the war zones out there that, you know, that we're talking about.
Some do work that way.
A lot of them do. A lot of them do.
Yeah.
But Karen, what do you do? There's one solution that in that case works very, very well. They just strip the association of all its powers. There are no covenants, there are no rules, they don't have the ability to fine, they can't foreclose, they can't do anything. That's it. They're done.
I think taking away foreclosure is very important.
Yeah.
Because they find that if they can fine you and, drive you into discomfort and foreclose on your property, profitable.
It is. They get rid of you. They don't want you. Out you go.
Right.
Out you go. So that's another one. That's another tool in the toolkit of what you can do and how you can handle it. Of course, this is just associations. And you are looking at a much broader, your field is infinitely broader.
Well, I look at it that most of the time you end up in court. And or much of the time, and when you do, then what? And you don't want to be stuck with limited resources. And then, of course, my belief now is in training human beings how to really help one another through knowledge and some spunk where they can't be bullied and where they will go in. We have a 90-some-year-old woman here who can't get her trash can out and back in. And this person that kept harassing was harassing her, and he was going for her house. He was going to do enough stuff to her to drive her out. And the neighbors pretty well got behind her. And she had a lot of spunk, too. She really got in his face, and the others got behind her. But these petty things, they have to be done away with. But one person sometimes has to help another.
Yeah.
If you have a disability, you may not be able to fight that battle by yourself. It's too big a bureaucracy, too big a test of your ability to handle stress. And by having a trained advocate by your side that speaks for you, that can go deal with some of these things and lets people know they're not going to get away with it and gives you support, makes all the difference. And I want to fill the country. I had this dream of this bank of advocates that cover our courthouses that look like anthills, that are so many and so ready and so prepared and so affordable that they can be brought in. And even we work long distance. A lot of times we have to, or the people would have no help. But if you work side by side with someone and you are willing to confront the board or the whatever is attacking them, it's amazing how it helps to have just that one extra person, that witness.
How you were doing some training, and I'm guessing that you're still doing a lot of training to get people knowledgeable enough and capable enough to do.
Well, we've had to make it so easy that it can be done everywhere. So it's online. We have our courses online, and it's affordable. You just go online at our website, equalaccessadvocates.com, EAA courses, it's called. Those are our courses. And we are training people. You have no hours. You do it in your own time. It trains you. You come away with a certificate. We're always available to talk with you and to be supportive. And you get that basic training of, no, you can't do that to this person. You think you can, and you've gotten away with it. But this federal law is a civil right, and it says you can't. And we're here to see to it that that law is enforced. And that's usually done through accommodation. Some people just have to have things made differently for them.
So,
and when they do, it has to be done.
So, I'm always going back to HOAs because that's pretty much the field that I work in, but obviously there are a lot of other areas in this country where people are being harassed, abused, denied their rights, denied ADA accommodations, denied access to all kinds of things. What other area, what areas is this prevalent? Is this sort of thing prevalent?
Well, it's huge with foreclosure, whether it's an association or not. It's huge in the foreclosure, the robo-signing and the foreclosure business. It's big in anything, any place you work. If the people at the job are not willing to accommodate and you have a disability and you need something, they have to work with you. They have to accommodate you. And many people don't know that. So they lose their jobs. But we go in and talk to the managers. We let them know what the rules are. We work it out. we work with, we act as a liaison. And, but the most important thing is the not being bullied. The key here is in any forum, any place, whether it's where you live or where you work or whether you go to school, the bullying is the enemy. And so once you know how to deal with the bullying, you pretty much have a solution or at least an answer for whatever it is they're trying to do to you. Because, like you said, 80-85% of the people just want peace.
The rest are
out to take your stuff, hurt you, bully you, feed their power need off you. And you never know where they're coming from. They come from any direction. And they don't care who you are, and they don't know you. They're just out to do it. Now it's being done through, the internet, through the phone. We have calls that come through trying to scare you or trying to control our elections, for God's sake.
You know, the funny one is the IRS is coming to get you. I just laugh at them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some of them are so stupid and so idiotic that, you know, you have to make fun of them. I go, oh, they're here. Let me go answer the door. You know, we're coming to get you. Right. Why are we so gullible, Karen? Why do we fall for some of this stuff? I know so many brilliant people have fallen for some of this nonsense.
Well, it's true, but bullies are good and psychopaths are very skilled. Also, if you have a disability, if you're aging and you get one of those scary phone calls, you worry about it and you're apt to fold. You're apt to say, oh my God, you know, I'm going to lose everything, or how do I protect myself? So again, a person helping a person is my answer.
So some jerk at the other end of the phone just randomly dials your number and says, I'm calling from the IRS, you owe us $75 million and we're coming to get you. You'd better get that money ready right now. How do you go after that person? I mean, I just laugh at them.
I
just laugh at them, and sometimes if I'm in a good mood, I'll just shred them to pieces. But sometimes I just hang up. But how do you go out? You don't know who these people are.
No, this is a different kind of problem, where these are very often international scams. So going after them requires way more than just our laws and our local laws. These are huge. And it's just like what's happening with our elections, where they try and say things about the candidates that will cause you to, that aren't true, that will cause you to sway your vote. You're so gullible. Again, though, if you have a person you can talk to that knows, that says, no, they can't do that. You know, if your grandma calls and says, the IRS is coming to get me, and you say, no, you know, I had an elderly uncle, and someone called, and I don't think they knew who I was. But I think by the time they said, I need your help, he said, is this Karen? And they said, yes. So they said that they'd been arrested in New York. They were in jail. They needed money sent right away.
Yes.
All this stuff. And he didn't do it. And then the next day he worried and called his daughter and said, do you think Karen was in trouble? I said, for God's sakes, no. Do not ever, ever respond to a call like that. I called him right away I said, and no, I would never do that. And no, I don't go to jail for whatever it was. It was something.
Is there, are you aware of anything, on, for instance, on the internet? Because those stories, you get emails from people saying, "Hi, this is Karen, and I went to Nova Scotia for a wedding, and I got in a car accident, and I woke up in a ditch, and all my money was stolen, and I'm desperate, and can you please send me enough money to tide me over?" And they said, you know.
Yeah.
You know that happens. I just hit delete and away we go. But is there some way, are you aware of any way to stop some of that stuff from coming in? Because, again, people are going to say, "Oh, my God, poor Karen. Yes, Karen, I'm coming. I'm sending you the money right now."
People do.
I know they do.
Publicity is the only thing I can think of, is to publicize this again. Training. We need to be training our public about elections, about how not to be swayed. We need to be training people in these things.
I got a call from or an email from my uncle a few years ago in England, and somebody contacted him and said that I was in trouble. Would he send some money?
Yeah.
Come on. That's insane. That's absolutely ridiculous. So where's the government in all of this?
I don't know.
Isn't
what we did in 2009, we put into effect the disability laws. And that was one of the best things that ever happened. But today, I don't know, the government is not our friend. It's taking away more than it's giving us. And, we're not even getting roads and bridges that, if anything, governments are supposed to take care of with all of our tax dollars.
That's what we have HOAs for, Karen.
Yeah.
That's what we have HOAs for, so they can collect the cash and make us double pay for it.
Right.
But isn't the government supposed to protect the citizens? This is a form of protection.
Yes.
This kind of abuse and this kind of thievery and thuggery and bullying is rampant.
But here's where we can get crazy. Yes, they should be. They're supposed to do. They're not doing it. They're failing on their job. They're corrupt. This organization, I can prove, I have people every day, I can prove the corruption. And I say to them, we will not live long enough to secure that corruption before we have to deal with your issue. So first, we're going to deal with your issue. We're going to get you as much as we can of protection and get you comfortable, and then we'll go back and we'll look at that corruption and see if there's something we can do. But you can march in the street, you can do anything you want to do. I think it all helps some. But again, we have to narrow it down. What can I control? And I teach this in my course. What can I control? What can't I control? Well, what I can control is how I help another person today, how I train them, how I get them ready so they're better at protecting themselves and others. I can do that today. Tomorrow, if I can do something bigger, I will. But the government corruption and all of that, it's beyond my control.
No,
so I can't lose sight of what I can control because of that.
No, I realize and I understand that we've got so many damn layers of government that it's kind of hard to figure out where things are going. And, you know, there's a power grab and there's all kinds of nonsense going on. But I sort of look at some of the stuff and I think, you know, there really ought to be some way of preventing some of this stuff, some way of... I don't know what the thing is. I mean, they'll come up with laws, but the laws do very, very little. Nobody's there to enforce them. I, that's a huge problem. But when you've got the internet...
is enforcement. We've got the laws. The laws are good. It's the enforcement.
It is the enforcement. So how many people do you have who are actually... have taken your course and are actually working with other people? Is it an ongoing, vibrant effect? You need more people, obviously.
Oh, we need so many more people. And we're working so hard. We're training and training. And we're going to develop a professional organization that of advocates. So they have like a yearly gathering, yearly conference, and they can begin to address some of these things, but as a group. And we have almost 200, I think, now in the nation.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah. So, and not all of those are... independent contractors that are available to the general public. Some work for law firms, some have jobs and were sent to get the training. And we're also doing ethics training so that we're having our say as to every profession, lawyers, et cetera, have to take so many ethics credits in order to relicense. And so we're getting that our say in about ethics having to do with face the fact of disability. If you think you are impervious, you're wrong. And if you think you're never going to have a day of disability in your life, you're wrong. And when that happens, how do you want to be treated? And so we educate them that you have to pay attention. Law schools don't train on disability law. And so every lawyer says it changed my practice, changed how I look at things when they took the training. So training changes people, changes the attitudes. And but for the 10 to 15%, who are just psychopathic, you know, we can make quite a bit of progress, and we are making progress. I get reports every day about what all they had to do in some cases is make some phone calls on behalf of the person, and it can make a difference.
I'm impressed that you're actually getting people in the workplace who are taking the training and can do that. Are companies and bosses and managers amenable to that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, many are. One that we really want to work with are the domestic violence shelters, and they don't use the ADA. Three groups don't understand their rights: veterans, elderly, and domestic violence victims. And they all qualify for accommodations and help under the Americans with Disabilities Act. And they don't know about it. They don't use it. Sometimes they're afraid. Elderly say, well, I'm not disabled. Oh, well, wait a minute. You have diabetes. You have high blood pressure. You had a stroke, you know, Come on. You need accommodations if you're going to be under stress. And we're talking about under stress. That's what we're doing in this nation. That's what creates the problems.
Have you crossed paths with Dr. Gary Solomon?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Because he wrote that ebook on how stress affects your body.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really, really good.
Yeah, he and I see eye to eye on this.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, because I'm talking to you, and I have him on, and I talk to him quite often, and yeah, it's pretty much the same, you know, I'm getting the same message from both of you. So this is something that we can't underscore often enough.
Right. And it is, if there is a solution, it's found in this area of stress, of relieving stress. How do you do it? Well, you're not going to change the world overnight. We have to do it one person, helping one person at a time. And it's amazing how effective that is. Doesn't feel like enough, but when you do it, and it works, it's amazing. And then you have another person who can say, by golly, I can say no. I don't have to be beat up this way. And the ability to say no to a bully, absolutely not.
Karen, one of the things that Gary Solomon was trying to do was to get the medical community to recognize stress and what happens in these cases as the trigger for a lot of the diseases that we have, a lot of the stuff that you were talking about.
Yeah.
But the medical community seems to have turned a blind eye to all of that. They're not really advocating for getting rid of the stress factors in people's lives. They're, you know, sort of shrugging their shoulders and writing another prescription, which I think all the drugs are killing us. But for someone who takes a handful of them every day, you know, I understand.
No, but that's true. There was a day when you went to the doctor, and you went into the doctor, and you put on that little bad little gown, and he looked at your skin, your body, checked you out, talked to you about what was going on in your life. Today, you go to a doctor, he comes in, picks up his prescription pad, and says, what's happening? And, okay, we'll give you this, we'll give you this, we'll give you this. Big Pharma is one of those.
Yes.
That is running, you know, the 10 to 15%.
Yes.
That is running the country.
Yes.
And dominating people.
Right. I know that a lot of the senators and congressmen have been given tons of money by the pharmaceutical corporate companies to vote for laws that benefit the pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
Not the patients, not the constituents, not the taxpayers.
Every conference I go to, psychiatric conference, says if we were to spend the amount of money on research that is put in ads, television ads,
for drugs,
about medications, we would be a lot further down the road with curing illnesses.
I agree. I absolutely agree with it. And I also firmly believe that a lot of the cures come from within you. That you can
do
a lot.
If you don't have that doctor talking to you and encouraging you, and what if we tried this? And helping like a human instead of handing you a pill. Don't you think that would go further in helping you get better?
I am very fortunate. I love my doctor, and as a former nurse, I'm not intimidated by doctors. And so I will look at something and say, no, I'm not going to do that. We're not going down that road. We're going to find a different way of handling this, but we're not going down that road.
Good.
And so we will discuss it, and I do have a lot to say on, you know, what I do and how I do it. Sometimes she'll convince me that I'm wrong and she's right, but she's got the medical degree, so. But you do have to talk to them. You do have to say no. I don't want that. I really don't. I'd like to find a different way of taking care of this. What else can I do? What other options are available to me?
But how many people go into a doctor and are able to hold their own and say no?
So many people are so afraid because you've got someone in a position of, I hate to use the word power, basically, but people are intimidated by doctors.
Yes.
I'm not.
Well, we have medical advocacy, you know, that the person goes in with you. I did that with a person you and I both know, Julie Alexander, when she was beginning to be ill, and she couldn't handle noise. And so I went to the doctor with her to try and get them simply to alter the television set that was going on in the waiting room, if they would just turn it down for her sake. And they wouldn't do it. They said they had no control over that. So we waited out in the hall. But while she was in the hall, I had to keep checking if it was her time. And frankly, her doctors were scared of her, but she couldn't hold her own with arguing with them and letting them know what it was she needed. And she was losing her ability to do a lot of that. Excuse me. Speaking and which she was always very good at was speaking.
Yeah, I remember. She was on the show. I remember talking to her quite often.
Just being her advocate, just being there with her and helping fend off some of that flack that comes at you, some of the bullying, get you to stop and say, can we just take a minute here? Let's stop and talk. You said before we came that this is what you wanted. Now it seems like, you know, is this what you want? Just that kind of help.
So we've only got about a minute and a half left. And I would like to put out a call for volunteers. Anybody who thinks they might be able to go in and advocate for someone else, or anybody who thinks they might want to do something like that, or even just protect themselves. Right, Karen?
Yes. Yes, they need to, if they're interested in our course, and you can be an advocate without the training, but to be prepared and to have all the ammunition you need, you go to equalaccessadvocates.com, plural advocates. Excuse me again, equalaccessadvocates.com. And then if you look for EAA courses, you will find that the training is there. And yes, we need as many as we can get. And we're changing the face of a whole lot of places that appeared to be impenetrable before. Just by getting in there, working with FBI. FBI likes us. You know, it helps.
It sure does. Karen, thank you so very much for joining us today. We are out of time, but I hope you'll come back again sometime, please.
Oh, I'd love to, Sue. Sure. I always enjoy being on your show.
Thanks so much. And thanks to everyone for joining us today. Please stay tuned. We'll be back.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.